Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Hospitalizations are spiking among the unvaccinated in parts of Illinois. Over the last 2 weeks, there's been a 46% increase in the number of hospitalizations across the state from COVID-19 and a 63% increase in deaths. It appears that we are still very much in the middle of a pandemic, and as it wears on, advice about what to do has become muddled. Questions over when to wear a mask, who should wear a mask, and what's safe and what's not are coming up more frequently as we navigate daily life outside our homes. To help answer some of these questions and update us on how local health departments are doing, we're joined now by Julie Pride, Public Health Administrator for the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. Julie, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
We're also joined by Amanda Mayle, Public Health Administrator in Boone County in the northern part of the state. She's also a registered nurse. Amanda, welcome to the 21st.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
And I'd also like to welcome back Chris Brook. He's a virologist and professor of microbiology at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Chris, welcome back to you. Thanks so much for being here as well.
Yep. Thanks for having me again.
Listeners, we also want to hear from you. Do you have questions about what the public health guidelines are now when it comes to COVID-19? 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. Maybe you have a question about the vaccine or the booster shot that public health officials are now recommending. Join the conversation at 800-222-9455, or you can tweet us at 21st show. That's at 21st show. So, Julie, I'm going to begin with you. How has the Delta variant changed things from a sort of public health standpoint?
Well, it has certainly changed it for the worse. It has accelerated what we're now seeing are explosive cases. So if you get into any type of group of unvaccinated individuals, what we're seeing is the entire household, the entire workplace, the entire, you know, social group becoming infected. And it is much more contagious. And so we're seeing, you know, these really rapidly intensifying outbreaks. And we're also seeing more serious cases, hospitalizations and deaths in even younger people than we did before.
Amanda, what about in your county? How do things look up there?
So we're seeing some of the same patterns up in the northern part of the state. We're in the Rockford region, and we have spent weeks now with less than 20% hospital bed capacity in our region. So for our 9-county region, we are struggling to make sure that we have enough space, right? So we've been working really closely with our hospital partners. With the back to school and the in-person learning realities, we've been working closely with our school districts. We are seeing younger and younger folks, as Julie mentioned, in the hospital. We're seeing disease patterns that are a little more intense and more easily transmissible within households and within our community. And we're focused on reminding people of the importance of washing hands, wearing that mask, and keeping their distance at this time. Those strategies still work. We want to encourage people to continue to do that. And we really, really want to protect our hospital system. Everyone is tired. Our healthcare workers, our frontline hospital workers are tired after 22 months of this, and they need to be protected. And the spaces where we care for the most vulnerable need to be protected as well.
After a year and a half, we're back to flattening the curve, it sounds like, which is where we started with this last March, a year ago March. Chris, we haven't spoken, I want to bring you into the show now, we haven't spoken with you, I think, since the Delta variant really became the predominant variant here in the United States. Can you talk about that and how it's different? Is it a question of it's more contagious? I've heard some scientists saying it's more fit, which is somehow distinguished. What do you have to say about the Delta variant?
Yeah, well, we're still learning a lot about the biology of the Delta variant, but it's pretty clear, as has just been indicated, that it is more contagious and transmissible than the Alpha variant that was previously circulating, and much more contagious than the viruses that were circulating last year. In terms of why that is, there's still a lot of open questions, but there's one particular mutation that the virus has that seems to make it a lot better at more efficiently infecting cells in our respiratory tract. So it's definitely much more fit, much more contagious than what we've seen in the past.
Chris, how do the vaccines do in protecting against the Delta variant?
They do really well, particularly in terms of protecting against severe infection outcomes. So yes, you can absolutely still get infected. If you've been vaccinated, that's been true the entire time, but the odds that you're going to get severe infection and disease and potentially need to be hospitalized are much, much lower, even with the Delta variant. It does seem like because the Delta variant is more efficient at replicating in people and more contagious, that if you are vaccinated, you're more likely to get a breakthrough infection. And there's still some question about the potential for vaccinated people to transmit the Delta variant to others. But all of the data point towards the vaccine still having an immense protective effect, both against disease and potential for transmission with the Delta variant.
And Chris, we had a text message question from a listener who asked about, is that true across all vaccines? Is the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, how does that do against the Delta variant as compared with the, I guess, Pfizer and Moderna, which are the mRNA-based vaccines?
Yeah, so the data that are out there, and again, this is still a rapidly moving area, but the data that are out there are that that all three of the vaccines that have been licensed in the United States, both the two mRNA vaccines as well as the Johnson & Johnson, are very effective at protecting against severe illness associated with the Delta variant.
Amanda, can you talk about how our vaccination rates in Boone County, where you're located?
Sure. So we are at about 47, a little over 47% across our region. We're under 50, but we're seeing counties in the Rockford region anywhere from about 42 to 43% all the way up to about 48, 49%. So inching our way towards 50%, that's taking into account the entire population, right? So factored into that are individuals that are not age eligible yet. However, we've had great success vaccinating our 12 to 17 year olds. A lot of interest from parents coming into our clinic, bringing their adolescent children and getting vaccinated together, which does give me hope for the coming months and for the back to school process.
Yeah, I saw a story this morning, and I can't remember where I saw it now, but that some parents, maybe it was the New York Times, are even sort of trying to cajole their pediatricians into giving shots to even younger children, as you said, are not yet eligible. For those who are eligible, Amanda, what are some of the barriers to getting people vaccinated that you're seeing?
So what we see in rural areas where our community is located is we do see transportation barriers, which we have attempted to alleviate by offering mobile and pop-up clinics around the county, especially in the most rural reaches, right? So up in the very northern part of our county where there isn't a clinic nearby or where there isn't public transportation available. We see some language barriers as well, which we work on by providing bilingual staff. Primarily Spanish would be the language that we would be doing outreach to in our community, making sure that we have bilingual staff available at all clinics that we're offering. And then I think one of the biggest barriers is still the myths that are circulating, right? The social media influence that is sometimes not always providing correct and accurate and timely information to the public. So I think that's one of the biggest barriers has been the challenge with communicating what is real and what is factual and alleviating people's concerns because information that they have had access to on the internet is not factual in nature, does not come from a credible source, and is not something that is providing an overall positive way that we can combat this pandemic together. It's actually working negatively against us, unfortunately.
Let me take a moment to reintroduce our guests. If you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with public health experts and a virologist about the latest with COVID-19, particularly vaccines, the Delta variant, and really, as we're going to continue this conversation, what is safe to do now? What is not safe to do now? Some of the guidance has come out, has sort of forced people to become sort of armchair epidemiologists, researching their own local counties' transmission rates of COVID-19 to figure out whether they should be wearing a mask or not. So we're speaking with Amanda Mail, who's public health administrator in Boone County in Northern Illinois, Julie Pride, public health administrator of the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District, and Chris Brook, who's a virologist at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Julie, I don't know if you have anything to add about sort of barriers and obstacles to vaccinations in Champaign-Urbana that would be different from what we heard up in the more rural parts of Northern Illinois. And if not, I mean, what is your goal? What is the sort of, vaccination target you're looking to before life will, you know, sort of get back to quote unquote normal again, whatever that means?
Well, I mean, we're right now at about 51, little over 51% of our county vaccinated. And we're seeing the same things that Amanda and other administrators are seeing all over the state. And that is, it's kind of across the board, but there are some entrenched anti-vax sentiments that are probably not going to go away no matter what. But what we're facing right now is something even different, because there are a lot of people who are not necessarily anti-vax, but unfortunately, the information that they're getting via the internet and in various other places is just absolutely demonstrably false, and it is killing people. So, you know, what we're trying to do is we're hoping that a lot of people out there in our county, at least, and everywhere, we're waiting for the FDA approval, and that now they'll start coming in larger numbers. We're continuing to see people come in and getting vaccinated, just it's taking a little bit, you know, longer. I would have liked to have seen 100% by the end of June, but that didn't happen. So we're just going to keep plugging away, because ultimately what we're doing is all of us are trying to protect our healthcare systems. Like Amanda said, we have to protect our healthcare systems, or what you're going to see is something that we've never really witnessed in our lifetime on this large of a scale. So we need to make sure that people are vaccinated so that they're not having the serious cases and then coming in, taking up all the hospital space. Like she said, our hospital personnel and healthcare staff all over are just exhausted. And, you know, they need a break. And if our systems become overwhelmed, then you're going to start seeing people dying from preventable things like normally treatable things like car accidents, asthma attacks, need for surgery, you know, because all the resources will be being taken up by something that is vaccine preventable. So, you know, when you say flatten the curve, essentially that's what we've been doing since the beginning, is using whatever tools we have available to stretch out the cases so that we don't have a huge spike that overwhelms our hospital systems. And if you look around the country, you're seeing that is happening with catastrophic results in a lot of southern states. And even now it's starting to happen in southern Illinois.
And listeners, as ever, we want to invite you to join our conversation at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Well, Chris, I want to ask you, as we just heard there, Julie make a reference to the Pfizer shot did get FDA approval, full FDA approval yesterday. It's no longer a quote-unquote experimental vaccine. It had been operating under emergency use authorization, though millions of people have gotten it. Can you talk about, do you think this changes things for the vaccine? And I wonder if in your perspective, you know, did this approval take a long time or about right? Or what do you make of it?
Well, I think it there's some practical effects in that some of the more places may be able to actually put vaccine mandates in place that were not able to do that given the emergency use authorization status of the vaccines prior to this approval. It also, just anecdotally, there are at least some percentage of people who've been hesitant to get vaccinated to date have said that the EUA made them uncomfortable, and that if the vaccines had full approval from the FDA, that they would be more likely to get it. So hopefully that will chip away at least some of the vaccine hesitancy. In terms of how long it took, I'm not going to weigh in there because that's not really my job or my place. I think that they're working as quickly as they can under really extraordinary circumstances, and giving full approval to a vaccine is not something that you want to rush. They're doing their due diligence to make sure that the safety profile is where it needs to be, especially as now they have data from effectively, millions of vaccinated individuals. Giving full authorization is not something that they do lightly. And so they're definitely making sure that no corners are being cut. All right. And I know that can be frustrating because people are eager to have these things out there.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, and for the children as well, as they say, I personally have an interest in seeing that emergency use for those aged 5 to 12, which I guess.
Oh my gosh, yeah, yes.
Yeah. All right, so we need to take a break. We're going to continue our conversation. We're going to do a sort of lightning round of what our guests, two public health administrators and a virologist, are personally comfortable doing in the community, eating in restaurants, going to movie theaters, those sort of things, with a mask, without a mask. Where are they now? We're going to have that after a short break. Again, you're welcome to join us. We can take your questions. 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. A lightning round on COVID safety in August 2021. Plus, we're going to talk about booster shots coming up after a short break. Stay with us. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the latest with COVID-19, the full approval of the Pfizer vaccine this week, as well as masking guidance from the CDC. There seems to be a lot of confusion about that, both on an individual level. I'm seeing a lot of corporate signage on the sort of entrance to businesses that doesn't quite match what the CDC, my understanding of the CDC guidance is. We're going to sort that out and talk about booster shots. We're speaking with Julie Pride, Public Health Administrator at the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District, Amanda Mail, Public Health Administrator in Boone County in Northern Illinois, and Chris Brook, a virologist at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. I want to, and 800-222-9455 is our number. If you have a question, you want to join our conversation, that's 800-222-9455. So I mentioned this before the break. I want to kind of do a lightning round about what you all are comfortable doing now. Julie, I'll begin with you. Would you eat in a restaurant indoors without a mask?
So as a vaccinated person who's relatively healthy, I have not been necessarily going out to eat at restaurants, but I would. I've mostly been going outside to eat. If I were unvaccinated, I would absolutely not be. If I'm sitting at a table with, my own family or friends that I know are also vaccinated, I am very comfortable with that.
Chris, what about you? Same question.
Yeah, pretty much the same. I mean, again, if I were unvaccinated, no way. Because I am vaccinated, occasionally I'll go, my family and I will eat indoors, but always still kind of wary. Like if the place seems too crowded, then we probably won't do it.
Amanda, how about you?
I would agree with what our other two speakers have said. I have been to a few restaurants in the last year and a half and sat indoors once I was fully vaccinated, generally tend to take my mask down if I know that I'm around others who have been vaccinated. I'm still sticking mostly to curbside pickup. And some of this is not just because of me and what I want to do to protect myself. I think I just want to make a really important point. Wearing a mask and being cautious is another way to show respect to other members of the community, right? So children who are not old enough to be vaccinated or individuals who are vaccinated who are severely immunocompromised and might still be at potential risk for some complications if they were to contract COVID-19. So I continue to err on the side of caution because I am a frontline healthcare worker. I am a nurse. I am at vaccination clinics. I'm interacting with unvaccinated people or people who are not fully vaccinated. And so I will continue to err on the side of caution because I think it's out of respect for those around me.
Yeah, and that's exactly where I am, because we're not eating indoors right now because of my unvaccinated children. So just, you know, don't want to expose them to that risk. What about a movie theater? Julie Pride, would you go to a movie theater right now?
Well, I can tell you that I have been, since being vaccinated, I have been to a couple of movies. But before I went in there, I did check out to see how busy it was. And the movies that I have been to, and I wear my mask while I'm in there, and I have never been to a movie so far that had more than about 10 people in it. In fact, many of the movies that I have seen, or several of the movies that I've seen, have had me and who I was with, and then maybe two or four other people in the entire theater. So would I be comfortable being inside of a packed movie theater at this time? Probably not.
Chris, what about you?
Yeah, I haven't been to see any movies, but I'm thinking about, you know, I'm considering it, and I agree with Julie. I would, if I did it, I would go and like scope it up first to see how crowded it was. And if it was crowded, I don't think I would do it. And I certainly wouldn't take my kids who are unvaccinated.
And they conveniently now, when you buy a ticket, at least where I go, they show you the actual theater and how many seats are taken in it. So that's actually kind of helpful.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Chris, since you mentioned children, would you send your children to a playground without a mask, outdoor playground?
Yes, unless it was really crowded. I mean, there's a lot of judgment call here, right? I think, you know, risk of transmission is much lower outdoors. And, you know, my kids are in school. So it just depends. If it's really, there aren't many other kids around, definitely. If I go and I see a whole bunch of other kids with no masks, then probably not.
You know, you mentioned school, and I'm glad you did. It's kind of a moot point now, but because the state of Illinois has imposed mask mandates for all schools and is moving with consequences for those that say they won't comply. But would you send your children to a school without a mask mandate? And I don't know what ages you're. Let's say, hypothetically, your children are in the unvaccinated, ineligible age group.
Yeah, I have a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old. And all I can say is we are extremely thankful that we're not having to make that decision right now, that the schools and daycare here do have mask mandates. I honestly don't know what I would do.
Yeah, same. Amanda, what about an outdoor concert? Would you go to an outdoor concert? And maybe do you distinguish between, you know, Small Thing in Boone County versus Lollapalooza on the lakefront in downtown Chicago?
Sure. So I liked how our other speakers mentioned scoping things out ahead of time, because I would say that that's sort of how I've been functioning even since I've been vaccinated and things have opened back up. It would really depend on the venue, how much space was available in between me and others around me, what type of congregating was taking place. I'm very hesitant to put myself in situations where I might expose myself and then carry something that then exposes someone else. So it would really depend on the venue, how busy, how much space there was in between, if it was truly outdoors or if it was only partially outdoors. You know, ventilation is a concern for me. I want to make sure that I'm someplace that's well ventilated and aired out as well.
Julie, what
and
about
as far as going Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, please go ahead.
As far as going to a concert, I'd like to just make a little joke and say, you know, I don't have a whole lot of time to do anything other than my job right now. Being a local public health administrator, this is an interesting lightning round because you're asking me about things that I haven't done in months because I simply don't have time to do anything other than fight COVID-19. So it sounds nice to go to a restaurant and relax or go to a concert, to be honest. But there's not a whole lot of time for the frontline healthcare workers to be doing that right now.
Fair enough. Fair point. And thank you for bringing that out. And I guess we'll say a fantasy wish fulfillment life, lightning round maybe then. Julie, I think this will be maybe our last question. And it's, would you fly to an area with high transmission? And I, you know, at this point, I'm looking at the CDC's latest map. That's pretty much everywhere in America, with the exception of Nebraska, it looks like.
Yeah. Again, as you know, as a fully vaccinated person, I would only travel if it was really necessary. But right now, like Amanda, I can't go anywhere. But regarding high transmission, what I think that people don't understand that they need to be concerned about is not necessarily, am I going to, you know, fly to Florida and contract COVID necessarily. What you, even as a vaccinated person, what I would be concerned about is, am I going into an area where the healthcare system is overwhelmed, so that if I should have a heart attack, or if I should get in a car accident, or should I have some other type of problem, am I going to be able to get the medical care that I need? And unfortunately, in quite a few places, the answer would be no.
Okay, just a few minutes left in our show today. I'm going to take one more moment to reintroduce my guests. They're Julie Pride, Public Health Administrator from the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District, Amanda Mail, Public Health Administrator in Boone County, and Virologist Chris Brook from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. We've had a number of questions about vaccines and boosters in particular. Let's go to the phones, though, at 800-222-9455. Ed is calling in from Lakin, Illinois. Ed, thanks for calling in. And it sounds like we might have lost Ed, but his question was about the year the polio vaccine was approved and how long that took compared with the Pfizer vaccine. Chris, I don't know if you, I don't know if that's in your wheelhouse, if you can weigh in on that, but about the development of the polio vaccine and how that compares to an approval, I guess, of it compared to where we are today.
Sure. So this is absolutely the fastest approval that has ever been granted to a vaccine. I think the previous record was for the mumps vaccine, and that was around 4 years. But I think a really important point that people need to understand is that that's not due to any sort of corner cutting. There's two big things that have driven the sort of remarkable speed with which we've been able to get these vaccines into the population. The first is that people had been working on these technologies for years. It's not like it's suddenly new technology that's being sprung on people. mRNA vaccines and corona vaccine technology have been, researchers have been working on them for years. Secondly, the process, the evaluation process and the clinical trials that were required for the EUA approval, they were no less rigorous than what had been done in the past. It's just that the way that they were scheduled and allowed to somewhat overlap, as well as the fact that there were so many COVID cases in the community that they could hit the number of infected individuals they needed to evaluate their clinical trial data so quickly, allowed the faster than average approval time. So yes, this is faster than normal, but that's not due to any sort of corner cutting or disregard for safety.
Okay, let's spend the remaining time we have talking about the idea of booster shots. We got a voicemail from Joe in Urbana. Let's listen to what he had to say.
I will get the third vaccine, but I mean, I would rather we send those vaccines to other countries, because if we're safe here and other countries are still having an epidemic, we're not really safe. It's a small world.
Okay, so we talked a little bit about this with Congressman Raja Krishnamurti earlier, who says he thinks there's a parallel track and that third doses here do not necessarily mean that we, you know, cannot also do this, you know, have the money to send vaccines around the world. But Amanda, can you talk about booster shots? Do you know when a third dose might be available in your area and how eligibility will work?
Sure. So if I might just clarify that there is a difference between getting a third dose and getting a booster, right? So just important for people to understand that severely immunocompromised individuals are actually eligible now to receive a third dose. And that's due to the fact that there's a certain list of conditions after doing additional work with our clinical trials and examining this virus further to understand waning immunity in folks or folks who need a little bit of an additional boost to their immune system. They're eligible now for a third dose. Starting in the middle of September, we will see that individuals who received in the first wave, so those frontline healthcare workers and folks in nursing homes and assisted living facilities who had those very first couple weeks of vaccine that were available would then be eligible to receive their booster dose, right? So just want to make sure that that's really clear, because I know that that has been confusing to the public and to the community, the difference between a third dose for certain categorized severely immunocompromised individuals and then getting a booster. We are working on preparing for our rollout now. We're already planning to stand up our mass vaccination sites again. I will be rolling up my sleeve as soon as I am able, as soon as I am eligible for a booster dose. I am looking forward to it. But I also agree with the individual who left the message, the voicemail. This is challenging. I personally have family that live elsewhere in the world, and I can tell you that they finally had the opportunity yesterday after waiting and waiting and waiting. They actually stood in line overnight to have the opportunity to receive their very first COVID shot yesterday morning. And I cried with joy. I was so excited to know that my family members that live outside of the United States have finally had the opportunity to enjoy the level of protection that we have so widely available here. So there's a huge disconnect, right? And it's very challenging to live in a privileged country that has so many resources and be fighting so vigorously to encourage people to be vaccinated when I know that people will stand in line overnight in other places in the world to be vaccinated. But getting the booster, absolutely. And encouraging our legislators and lawmakers and Congress to push vaccine out to other countries that need it is absolutely something we should be doing.
All right. Amanda Mail, Julie Pride, and Chris Burke, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st. That is all the time we have for our program. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.